Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for this Friday. It is the 22nd of July, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, and I thank you very much for choosing our program. We are live here Monday through Friday at noon on KVOI AM 1030. This is Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station and the Voice Network. And we have our simulcast partners along in Douglas and Globe. Along with Douglas and Globe and Tucson, we pretty much have Southern Arizona covered. Pretty much touching on at least eight counties in Arizona. So wherever you are in the southern part of the state, you can listen to the Buckmaster Show. We're always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We have all our shows archived for 24/7 listening. Also, the Buckmaster Show now with a collaboration with TucsonSentinel.com. We have a link on TucsonSentinel.com. We are excited about that collaboration. Fridays here on the Buckmaster Show, we begin with Friday Focus featuring a newsmaker interview. Then at the bottom of the hour, it's our Friday Reporters Roundtable. Then we close out the show with our Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. Today's Friday Focus interview is with Tucson Police Chief Roberto Villasenor. Joining me in our discussion with the chief is Dylan Smith, publisher of the nonprofit online news service, speaking of TucsonSentinel.com. We invite you to join in the conversation from wherever you are in Arizona, 790-2040, if you have a question for the chief, or you can always email us at buckmastershow.com. Also, we are on the Buckmaster Show page on Facebook, and we try to preview each day's show, who the guests will be, at least 12 to 24 hours in advance. So let's begin with, first of all, Dylan, we're glad you're along. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Chief, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for inviting me, Bill.
A lot to talk about. I think I will start with the city's new 911 system and the glitches there. How concerned are you for the safety of the people who call in?
Well, first off, the 911 system itself operates under our general services department, so it's not part of my department, so I'm probably not the best person to talk about that. But I know that they are working very diligently on making sure that they're addressing the issues that are brought forward. What has occurred is that there's a transition to a new system. And as you know, whenever you get a new system and you're putting in new software, new hardware, there's always glitches that need to be worked out, and I believe that's what's causing some of the concern with the employees that work there. I think that the employees have made their concerns known. The director of general services is dealing with that. Once the calls come into 911, they get dealt with there by those dispatchers and then transferred over either to police or fire or general services, and that's where my department touches them.
And we had the city manager, Mike Letcher, was seated in your chair a week ago today, and he was talking about that, you know, any system you buy, there is no fail-safe system on the market for 911 systems.
Correct. And the system, my understanding, the system that they have purchased is in use in many other large metropolitan cities, and I'm sure that there are issues when they implemented it there as well. But, you know, you can't take those things lightly. You have to make sure that you're checking all of your input, make sure that all your T's are crossed, your I's are dotted, because you're dealing with people's safety, and you just can't take chances with that. So I think that they will be doing everything they possibly can to make sure that system is functioning properly.
What are the pluses of this new system once the bugs are ironed out? Why the switch?
That I really can't answer to with any expertise, because that's really not in my shop. That's the general services area.
But you haven't noticed, as far as the police are concerned, any big change with the new system?
For us, when the product comes to us, it's usually all the triage work has been done. It's supposed to capture the what's called the anti-alley information, which is the location where the call's coming in. But in addition to the electronic and technological aspect, there has to be a personal aspect where our dispatchers or the 911 dispatchers confirm that information, affirm addresses that are given that are brought out by the technology. So there's a combination of those two factors that go into the process.
It seems that a lot of the challenges, both with this new system and the old system, are mainly centered around people's use of mobile phones instead of landlines.
mobile phones have changed a lot of the way things are occurring within public safety, and you're exactly right, because before you knew exactly where the call was coming from. It was a static location. It was a consistent location. Now it could be from a variety of different areas. There could be technology on the phone that blocks the GPS location. You could set switches on your phone to block that. There's a variety of things that affect how the mobile phones affect our technology, and as an industry, we're adopting to those.
Has that shift affected response times any, the extra time it takes to figure out where somebody's calling from, those extra questions?
No, because that's really not an issue. You know, the only time that comes into play is if we get a call and there's no intelligent communication, and by that I mean people talking and giving us an address. It could be they're screaming. It could be they're just yelling, asking mm-hmm. for help, and not giving us a location. And if it's not a landline, that could be a problem for us if the GPS is turned off on the phone. So we do have policies in place on how our personnel respond to that. But, you know, policies are written in a sterile environment on a piece of paper when you're not dealing with people who are threatening your safety or you're not scared out of your wits because of something's going on. And sometimes the policy doesn't cover every situation.
It's 10 past 12 on the Buckmaster Show, 790-2040. If you have a question for Chief Villasenor, he would be more than happy to take that question. I want to talk a little bit about the jail population. It's near or at historic lows. We had Sheriff Dupnik on the program 2 weeks ago. He is kind of baffled about this. Do you have any theories about what's going on? And, of course, crime across the country is supposedly down in major big cities anyway.
I do have some theories. Now, whether I can prove these theories or not, we'll find out with time.
Give us a shot.
I think that the concept of community policing has taken root across the nation over the past decade and a half. And this is the concept of not just responding to calls for service and taking a report and then trying to do an investigation after the fact. But it's actually identifying problems beforehand, looking at different solutions, which may not be law enforcement geared, and trying to put the information you gather into place so that you could solve those problems and prevent those problems in the future. That's a long process. It's a staff-intensive process and a time-intensive process. But I think it is starting to pay off over the past 5 years. You have seen historic decreases in crime and consistent decreases in crime across the nation, including in Tucson and along the southwest border. Another thing, you know, since we were just talking about cellular phones, I think cellular phones have played a part in this. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, people, if they saw something, a crime occurring, you know, they had to go to a nearby phone. They had to run into a place to call us. Over the past 10 years now, they have a phone right in their hand. And they're able to call. We're able to coordinate. We're able to respond. We're able to get there quicker.
That's a lot of set of eyes that you have gained.
And that's the epitome of community policing. That's what it's about, is it's law enforcement and the community members working together to try and thwart crime or prevent crime. So I think that this is starting to pay off. Where I'm seeing the problems is in the past 2 years across the country, law enforcement agencies are losing personnel on a consistent basis, including in Tucson. My fear is that we will start to see the cost of these staffing reductions in the next few years as crime starts to go back up. We've all been around. We know that crime stats are cyclical in nature. Everything is cyclical in nature. We've been on a downward trend here for a while, but as I look at stats, it's leveling off, and I'm starting to see some increases in a couple categories, and so it has me worried as to what will happen in the next couple years.
Throughout the last 18 months or so, local police in Arizona have really been thrust into political issues with SB 1070, here
really?
Locally with the demonstrations related to ethnic studies.
The marijuana.
Exactly. Yeah. The new medical marijuana laws.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of challenges has being – you're not an elected official like the sheriff is. How do you handle being stuck in the middle of these political issues, and how has that challenged your department?
Well, I remember that airplane movie where the guy kept running his hand through his hair and saying, I picked the wrong time to quit. You know, I said, maybe I picked the wrong time to be chief. But it has made our jobs much more complex. And I think that we are being challenged with different issues that we didn't envision, you know, a decade ago.
Does that have a specific effect on your trying to develop community policing, the trust with the community?
I think that it just makes it much more of a challenge. I think that the best way to do is, you know, just like in any situation, though, is to be as upfront and as honest as you can be. Be willing to admit mistakes when they occur. Be willing to support your people when they're right, even if it's not politically popular. And try and stay a steady course. What I have tried to do is to find what I feel to be the right process, which is the middle of the road. I think right now, because you are right, politics are playing a huge part in almost everything we do now. And because of the economy, because of the situation in the country, because of political unrest, people are on edge about everything. And what unfortunately I have seen, and this is my opinion, I want to stress that, my opinion is that it seems like the radical elements of both political views are the strongest voices right now.
And lately you've been catching flack from the people on both
sides. So that's kind of like my litmus. If I'm catching flack from both sides of the radical views, then I'm probably close to that middle road approach that I really feel comfortable with.
Either that or you're terribly, terribly wrong.
That will be, you know, something I have to look at.
We are going to take a break here. It's 12:15 on Friday Focus. The chief of the Tucson Police Department, Roberto Villasenor, is with us. Dylan Smith is joining me in the questioning from TucsonSentinel.com. Take a break here to listen to the fine Buckmaster Show sponsors. We'll be back with the chief. If you have a question for the chief, you can send it our way, 790-2040. We'll be back.
Everyone's piling on big banks nowadays, with good reason. But still, you're skeptical about moving your money. We get it. But let's think about that. If you're worried about convenience, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has local branches and thousands of fee-free ATMs nationwide. If you're worried about service, at Pyramid, you're a member. At big banks, you're a number. There's a difference. And if you're worried about savings, Pyramid Federal Credit Union has better rates and fewer fees than big banks. Like our great low 4.5% APR on new, used, or refinanced vehicle loans with terms up to 60 months. Plus, save another 0.25% with payment options. So Pyramid wins on convenience, service, and savings. If you're still skeptical about moving your money, try us out. Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Visit PyramidFCU.com to learn how. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For 5 years, the RTA has been delivering our promise to you, finishing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways, with 30 projects underway, including River Road to Ruthroth along LaCholla and the Star Pass Mission Road intersection. Please use caution in the area and obey all traffic signs. The RTA has also implemented transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting. And you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
It's 12:20 on the Buckmaster Show. It's Friday Focus. We bring a newsmaker in, and I'm usually joined and always and have joined on Friday by a local reporter. Today it's Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. The Friday Focus interview is with the Tucson Police Chief Roberto Villasenor. If you would like to join in the conversation, 790-2040, 790-2040. Even though this is an interview-driven show, there is, of course, always room for you and your questions. Chief, we were talking about the sustained decline in violence crime across the country. However, there's something that's strange going on. The death toll for police officers is rising across the country. What do you make of that?
Well, that is something that is alarming to chiefs across the country, and it's continuing to rise this year. It rose last year by about 15 to 20%, and it's on the same path for this year. We've had multiple incidents where we've had, more than one officer shot at different events, and we don't know what's causing that. We are, with the FBI through their law enforcement officer killed and assaulted program, they gather the stats, they try and decipher that, and we try and use that to develop the training. But, it's a very troubling and a very perplexing statistic.
Just locally, the number of officer-involved shootings seems to be growing as well.
We had a very large spurt of them at the beginning of this year, and that does go, come and go, but it's something where our officers have been faced with deadly threats or saved other people from deadly threats, and it's part of the job, but we don't like to see that number go up. We definitely like to see that one go down.
Do you think there's a reason that this is happening more frequently, or is it just some sort of statistical happenstance?
I'll be honest with you. From my opinion, I expected this to happen earlier, and I think that the stress of the economy I thought would have an appearance much earlier in violent crime, and I was very pleased that it did not. But it makes me wonder now if that is where we're starting to see some of the stress across the nation on violence coming out because of people's frustration with the economy, the job situation, and things in general.
Despite the long-term trend in the decline in violent crime, are we seeing any sort of short-term spike?
It's hard to predict off that. A few years ago, our homicides, we had, close to a record year in homicide. And then we had close to a record low year in homicides. And last year, we were back to our normal. This year, we started up looking like we'll have a slight increase again. So it's hard to say. Where I've seen an increase is in sexual assaults. We have an increase in the number of sexual assaults this past year. And then also in burglaries. Larcenies, that's going up again. The difference there is a burglary involves a breaking and entering, and larceny is just a theft. So the larceny makes sense with what's going on with the economy. People are strapped, they're stressed, and you start to see this as a way that people respond in getting things that they need or want.
Chief Villasenor is with us from the Tucson Police Department. He is the chief of the department. Dylan Smith is with us from TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan and I asking the chief some questions. If you have any questions, join us at 790-2040. Photo enforcement. Very few cities around Arizona are making any money, at least didn't make much money in 2010, according to a survey that the Arizona Republic did. I think the city of Tucson did make a little money. I think it was a couple, maybe not even the figure that jumps out at me is $187,000, something like that, in photo enforcement for the 9 photo enforcement units that were out there in 2010. Is this about safety or is it about money?
People won't believe me, and I've been saying this for a couple years here now. It is for us about safety. We do not, as a city, make a lot of money out of this at all. In 2010, we had about $400,000 come into our general fund, but of that $400,000, that's designed for the cost of the system. So I have the technicians that go out there and operate the radar vans. I have the officers who review every single citation and determine whether, and actually let me reverse that, it's they view every single flash, every single picture taken, and then determine if a citation gets sent or not. Because you were flashed doesn't mean that automatically there is going to be a citation. Every event still has a police officer review it. For the intersection cameras, they review the video as well as the still pictures.
Yeah, because you could be behind a bus.
Sure. Or it could be so close that an officer would say, you know, if I was on that street corner, I probably would have given a break there. I wouldn't have made that stop because it was so close.
Yeah.
And so they still make a determination on whether they issue the citation by a person, not a camera. So for us, it has always been a safety issue because what that allows, it allows me to place officers at intersections other than where the cameras are at. I consider it a force multiplier. It has brought down accidents at a lot of the intersections where they're placed. And for me, it has always been a safety issue, but there are people who are bound and determined to believe that it's all about the money, and the large part of the money goes back to the state or to the vendor, and a very small portion comes back to the city.
So I shouldn't let it ruin my day. Last Saturday, I was through the intersection, but there was a flash, and I don't think it was my car, but I started to really, you know, worry about that all day. You're saying every flash is reviewed.
It was just one of your many fans, Bill. Was
that
a photo?
What it was? Yeah. So I didn't ruin my Saturday. Okay, Dylan. I wanted to ask you also, Chief, about, you know, the marijuana thing. We had talked a little bit about that earlier. Governor Brewer spoke to the annual conference of Arizona Chiefs of Police up in Flagstaff. You were not at that particular meeting. You were back in Washington, I understand. But she scolded your colleagues of the chiefs around Arizona for what she said was their silence on Proposition 203 when it was being debated before the November election last year. The measure, of course, allows individuals with a doctor's recommendation to buy marijuana. Did the chiefs take a stand on that?
Yes, the chiefs' organization did come out against that ordinance, so I was somewhat surprised to hear about that article where the governor is saying that if the chiefs would have spoken out, it might not have stopped it. I think that as the leader of the state and the top, you know, government individual in the state, that it would have probably had more of an impact if the governor had spoken out about that and talked about the problems with that ordinance and legislation, as well as the attorney general. And I do have to commend the attorney general and the governor on their decision to ask for an opinion from the feds on whether this program is going to cause problems for state workers and if they're going to give a ruling on whether they can actually issue these licenses for growers and dispensaries. I think that that was a creative way of responding to the issues. But the chiefs did come out against this provision, and I think that that point needs to be brought out.
Since TPD is down such a significant number of officers, how does that impact how you're able to put boots on the ground? And what can we out there in the community do to help make this a better, safer city?
As far as their marijuana provision, how that affects us, I mean, marijuana for the end user, that already holds a pretty low priority.
I just mean in general, you know, the number of people you're able to put
officers,
on the street.
Fewer officers, generally.
Oh, I'm
not
sorry.
Not about marijuana.
You know. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought we were still talking about that topic.
Okay.
Well, with us, we go back to what we were talking about earlier. Even though right now our staffing is short, and so response times are being affected, not terribly, but the low-level calls are having longer response times. We're still doing quite well with the high-level priority calls. We get to those in good time and well within our limits. But the lower-level calls, we're having a longer response time to. But that doesn't mean we don't want you calling us. Because part of community policing is intelligence-led policing. And you develop intelligence by information that comes to you. So even if we don't get an officer there right away, if we get a call saying that there was a blue vehicle with two subjects matching this description that were seen at this location. And then we had a crime that occurred there. And the next night we get a call about a blue vehicle with two or three subjects matching this description. You start to get that information. It all gets captured. It gets put in our database and gets analyzed by our analysts eventually.
Do you find that because you're not responding to low-level calls like, you know, minor traffic accidents and things like that, that people are calling in less frequently about those?
No, but that was a response we needed to do to get our resources up.
Chief Villasenor, thank you very much for being on the Friday Focus with us on the Buckmaster Show. Thanks. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
And Dylan Smith will stick around. He'll be joined by Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star for our Friday Reporters Roundtable. That's next on the Buckmaster Show. Stay with us. SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. Today's shooting at a youth camp in Norway may have been deadly. An eyewitness tells a Norwegian broadcaster that he saw as many as 25 bodies at the camp where a gunman dressed in a police uniform opened fire. It was the second of two terror attacks in Oslo today. At least seven people are dead after a bomb damaged buildings in the capital, including the building where Norway's government has its offices. Police say they have made an arrest in the camp shooting, and they believe that suspect is connected to the bombing as well. President Obama is extending his condolences to the people of Norway. He says that today's attacks are a reminder that the world has a stake in stopping terrorism. Wall Street, the Dow down about 52 points. The Nasdaq is trading 25 points higher. The S&P currently unchanged. More details at srnnews.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
If you're having foot or lower back pain, you're not alone. My foot doctor recommended custom foot orthotics created by Bob Novak. Bob is a certified pedorthist and best in Southern Arizona at creating just the right foot support at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak, the owner of Arizona Limb and Brace, a call at 795-2553 or visit Bob at Rosemont and Fifth. I did, and my feet thank me every day.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Nell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It's 12:34 on the Buckmaster Show. We want to thank the Chief of Police in Tucson, Chief Villasenor, for spending a half hour with us on the program on Friday Focus. Dylan Smith from the TucsonSentinel.com and myself asking the Chief some interesting information came out there about the decreasing crime rate, but how community policing seems to be paying off, perhaps because of cell phones. Some interesting stuff there. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030 and the Voice Network over Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. Every Friday, we try to bring in a couple of reporters for our Friday Reporters Roundtable. Joining me on the Friday Roundtable today, Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com and Sarah Garrett-Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star. And you are welcome, any of our listeners, to join in this conversation. 790-2040, always welcome on the Buckmaster Show live line. First, I want to begin, Sarah, by saying, from my point of view, personally, my heart goes out to the 52 people, your colleagues at the Arizona Daily Star, their families, everyone affected by this large layoff at your employer yesterday, and I really, really am sorry that had to happen.
Yeah, it was bad. Very, very sad day for many, many people. The families who were affected directly, the community at large who lost a lot of really great journalists who've served the community for a long time in many capacities, behind the scenes and the bylines and the photo taglines that people recognize. It's the kind of thing that no community benefits when journalists are put out of work, because people like to criticize journalists and the media and see us all as one giant conglomerate. But I know, and I'm sure Dylan can attest to this too, that news outlets are made up of people who come to work every day, do their best, do difficult jobs, act professionally, give it their all. They're passionate about what they do. It's not a high-paying profession.
No, it isn't.
It's difficult. It's not glamorous. It's not like on television. And it's the kind of thing that's hard work, and the community is poorer for it.
I agree with you, and I'll let Dylan join in here in a second. But first, I want to say, regardless of how someone might feel about the Arizona Daily Star, one way or the other, I'm telling you, a community of a million people, which we are, a metropolitan community, is a richer place, a better place, when we have a major news, daily news organization out covering what's going on in this community.
Right. And when the Tucson Citizen lost the print edition, and it's now the TucsonCitizen.com. That was a tragedy. The Star and the Citizen have competed for years, but no one celebrated that. That's certainly for sure. So there's the personal sadness that comes from people that you've known and worked with for years. You know their families, you know their pets, you know their stories. You hang out with them outside of the office. When something big happens, like the January 8th shooting, people just show up. That's what you do. You're a journalist.
Sure.
So there's that part of it, the personal end of things. You hate to see your friends suffer this sort of tragedy. But then there's the broader thing that you may not see exactly in the same way. You may not notice it, but it's there. It's a deficit.
And Dylan, you went through this when you worked for the Tucson Citizen.
Indeed.
So you know what this feels like.
Well, even before the Citizen closed, both the Star and the Citizen went through a number of rounds of layoffs. And, for years now, both locally and across the country, we've seen major news organizations cutting people right and left, both because the economy's been going downhill, because of very bad business decisions that they've made, because they haven't been able to leverage the internet effectively. Here in this town, we have, at this point, hundreds of journalists who are no longer on the street reporting. And yesterday, we lost a number of very, very fine, dedicated journalists, people in the other departments working there, supporting the operation and marketing and advertising and the print shop. Across the board, we had very great people lose their jobs yesterday, and I think it's a very sad thing.
And I have to say that for the people who do remain at the Star, and I, it's the, I mean, journalists are journalists. It's, you don't go into journalism because you want something to do or it sounded like it might be interesting. You don't, it's not a day job, a 9-to-5 kind of thing. You either are a journalist or you aren't.
It's a passion.
It's a passion. It's something that it's, you devote your life to, sometimes at a cost personally. And so it's the kind of thing that the people who remain at the Star, I know, are dedicated to covering Tucson, covering Tucson's news, being of service to the community as best we can. And so while our resources are lesser than they were just yesterday, we do remain committed to doing the best job we possibly can covering our community.
And it's really sad because this is just going on all over the country, Dylan, isn't it?
Indeed, and it's primarily driven because these giant media companies, you know, whether it's Gannett, which published The Citizen, still has an ownership interest in the Star, Lee Enterprises, which you know is terribly leveraged, pretty much teetering on the edge of bankruptcy. They're the publisher of the Star and many other newspapers across the country. You know, they've gotten themselves into a position where they pretty much have no choice if they want to try and survive, but to cut and cut and cut and cut. Of course, that doesn't leave them very poised for the future. And it also, you know, it's giant companies that aren't, in a business sense, dedicated to their communities. They, you know, they're not willing to take serious hits. Unlike 30 years ago, when newspapers were primarily locally owned, when TV stations were locally owned. This isn't just newspapers.
And
it's TV stations
and radio
as well.
Stations. I am delighted that we are broadcasting on one of the few locally owned broadcast operations and here in Tucson. Doug and Mary Martin with their stations here do a fantastic job. And, you know, it's localism. And you're right, Dylan. It's just a lot of that localism has gone by the wayside, Sarah.
And I think part of it is, and people may not understand that what journalists do isn't exactly what people might think. I mean, it's not simply being a stenographer. It's not as simple as going to an event and then saying, here's everything that happened. There is critical thinking involved. There's reporting involved. There's talking to people. There's analysis. There's interviewing. There's there's skills involved that people don't see. And so I don't know that it's as apparent what journalists do and what when they do it well. I don't know that it's understood as well, and I don't know if Dylan agrees or not. But it's the kind of thing that it's a craft and it's an art, and it's if you're really good at it, I think people notice, and if you're really bad at it, I think people notice, or they should notice. But it's something that is it's crucial to a community to have that sort of critical thinking and that eye on the people in power, the authorities, what people are doing. Because face it, I mean, people go to work, people have families, they have jobs. They don't have time to pay attention all the time to what's going on at the city council. It's our job
to pay attention for people and
right.
put things into context for people, because they don't have all day to look up stray random facts in public documents. That's what we do for them.
And really, does anyone really, really, really want to hang out at a TUSD meeting? I mean, really? Wouldn't you rather pay someone to do that?
And my producer, Rosemary Brandt, the birthday girl this week, points out that really, you know, we shouldn't generalize that even though some of these entities are not locally owned, there are people within those entities who do care about the local communities.
Absolutely.
That they
I think,
serve.
You know, yeah. Everybody who is a local journalist certainly cares about Tucson. That's why they're doing that job. The business decisions are coming from thousands of miles away, and you really can't blame any of this on what's going on, you know, from journalists here in Tucson. They're not the ones deciding to do this.
No. So bottom line, before we move on to a couple of the other big stories of the week, Sarah Garrett Gaston, the Arizona Daily Star, the Star survives. There will be a Star tomorrow on my doorstep. And there will be one certainly Sunday morning.
Yes, there will. Yes, there will.
Good. Speaking of the Star, editorial, I'm not sure whether you or your colleague, Jane C. White, wrote that about the, despite the Ninth Circuit Court ruling, priority must be learning. the ins and outs of the DSEG suit must not distract from the TUSD mission.
Yeah, that was the outgrowth of all those TUSD meetings that I got paid to go to, so you didn't have to.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was the Ninth Circuit about 18 months, 2 years ago. The U.S. District Court judge told the TUSD district, that Tucson Unified School District, that they had essentially met the obligation. They were no longer under the desegregation federal court order. And this is the Cliff Notes version. I'm skipping an awful
Please,
lot
yes.
of three
bottom,
decades.
Give me your bottom line.
Yeah. And so what happened this week was that the Ninth Circuit said, well, no, actually, district court judge, you were entirely wrong. And it was a very strongly worded decision and said, no, that the district couldn't just say we intend to do better in the future and we have some nice plans and that we had nice intentions in the past and that was enough. So the appellate court said you're really not grown up enough to stand on your own and be out from under the court desegregation order. So that's where the district stands now. But what our point is whatever the legalities are, and they are myriad and many and have to be worked out with the governing board and do you appeal and all of that sort of stuff, the focus has to be the kids. So often
– it's another distraction for TUSD.
Right. And so often it's like the little guys sitting in the classrooms in those tiny little chairs get overlooked. It's the kind of thing where all of this that we talk about – we're forgetting the people this is all about, and that is the kid sitting in the classroom, the kid who is supposed to be able to get an equal education no matter what school they go to, no matter what neighborhood they're in, and that's where it needs to be the focus.
I think it mainly comes down to this is just a legal skirmish amongst the lawyers, and I don't know if it'll really have an impact at all that will trickle down into the classroom. You know, the TUSD has been operating under a plan approved by the judge that this got kicked back to, even though he hasn't been actively supervising their desegregation efforts. They've been working under the post-unitary status plan. I don't, you know, I would say it's likely that the judge will just say, well, I approved this plan, and if I have to supervise, you keep following this plan.
But the district has for three decades kind of gone unsupervised. They've had a lot of plans. They have committees. Committees keep bringing up the same problems, and they never get resolved. The whole thing it comes down to is the district never really kept track of what it was doing. Was it working? Was money spent well? Did it work out in terms of kids being able to achieve? And they didn't keep the data, and it's coming back to bite them. That's what needs to change.
And it's been an enormous amount of money.
Yeah, a lot of money spent on that. Speaking of money, the fundraising website is now up for the Border Fence. Some folks are making kind of a big deal out of this. I guess, Sarah, the first day, $68,000. What will that buy? Will that buy about 2 inches of a new border fence?
I wow.
No, it's a very small portion of what it would take.
Yeah, it's like 2 millimeters of I don't know how much it actually buys, but just think how sad that is. I mean, how sad is that? People are giving money to a border fence when they're so – I mean, just think of all the ways that you could actually spend that $68,000. There's the food bank. There's literacy
programs.
The Humane
Society.
Humane Society. There are a lot of ways that you could donate your money, and I'm certainly not bringing any of those organizations into a very political arena.
No,
sorry, not trying to do that. Any of your organizations out there listening. But I'm just saying –
yeah.
You could spend your money in a lot of other ways that have concrete, no pun intended, ways that would benefit actual humans today in their lives.
Well, the big problem is there's really nowhere for the state to build a fence. They can't build it right on the border. The feds aren't going to let them do that. They could build it, you know, a couple hundred feet into U.S. territory if a rancher or someone wants to let them build it on their own private land. And really the dang fence is so ineffective. We've got a video posted of a couple of teenage girls shinnying up the thing in about 15 seconds. And, you know, anybody can climb over this thing.
They're over the thing in 15 seconds.
Yeah. Even though it's a, you know, fairly high fence that doesn't have any crossbars, you can still go right up and over it if you're in any way motivated.
Other big story of the week, it actually happened Friday night. We were so we didn't talk about it on last Friday's Reporters Roundtable. The Brian Miller out as the local GOP chairman. Is this a big deal, Sarah, in your opinion?
I think it is for the GOP. I think it speaks to divisions within their ranks. It seems to be a
divided organization.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah. I think it's an organization kind of in search of its own heart and soul in terms of. I mean, Brian Miller did say some things that people found offensive about the Garena shooting, and then some other issues. I think it's like we're seeing across the country. There's divisions within the Republican Party, between the Tea Party element and the more mainstream Republican conservatives, and I think it's playing out here.
Final word, Dylan.
Even more than that, the Miller supporters weren't the Tea Party element. The Tea Party ended up voting against him at that meeting. Most of he's the sort of the Ron Paul libertarian wing that isn't a Tea Party element. And you know, he still had a significant number of supporters. He lost that closed election.
Yep. Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com, and Sarah Garrett Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's find out what's going on the weekend. That's coming up next with Matt Russell on the Buckmaster Show Friday edition.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson area. Donated items, thrift shop proceeds, volunteer hours, and financial gifts help support our philanthropic programs like Operation School Bell. Your generosity continues to change lives in our community. For more information on how you, too, can make a difference, visit us at AssistanceLeagueTucson.org. Assistance League of Tucson, volunteers working together.
Biro Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Biro Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Biro Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at viroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub. From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
The RTA, delivering our promise to you during the past 5 years, completing over 400 projects, including 5 major roadways and the launch of Sun Express and Sun Shuttle Transit Service. With 30 projects under construction, including Tankerverde Road and the Catalina Highway to Houghton and the bus pullout at Ina and Oracle, please watch for workers and obey all traffic signs. Your tax dollars create jobs and make travel in our region faster and safer. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me.
Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tankerverde at the southwest corner of Tankerverde and Savino Canyon and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tankerverde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tankerverde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Twisting and Shouting by the Pool. He's back in Tucson after traveling for a couple of weeks, having all sorts of problems at airports and up in Las Vegas. Now he's back. It's Matt Russell, Tucson publicist, man about town, and my new name for him, he's the culinary or culinary cruiser. How you doing?
No one cruises the culinary scene like I do, Bill Buckmaster.
I mean, you've been doing it since you were a little kid going to Redskin games saying, "Dad, can I have another hot dog?"
That's about it, where it all started at RFK Stadium. I was actually up in Las Vegas for the last couple of days. One of our clients at my public relations firm is the nation's almost 5,000 7-Eleven store owners. So this is Slurpees for breakfast, lunch, and dinner at this conference, Bill.
Boy, 7-Eleven really was center stage for you then, I guess, up in Vegas, huh?
Certainly was. I don't know that I'm going to be seeing another hot dog or energy beverage anytime soon.
Tucson Originals, a group I know you like very much, summer pick of the week.
Yeah, Tucson Originals members have got these great specials happening throughout the summer for only $20.11. My pick of the week this week, Bill, is from Pasco Kitchen and Lounge right down there on University Boulevard in Main Gate Square. They've got a half portion of their market salad together with a big boy burger and a glass of their house wheat beer or a house red or house white for only $20.11. Now, this big boy burger, Bill, follow along with me. It's topped with crispy pork belly, a panko-crusted egg, and then draped with a beautiful blanket of hollandaise sauce. This is a meal fit for a king, Bill.
Oh, listen, the one thing missing is the Thousand Island sauce, because you talk about big boy burgers. I think of the little fat boy holding up the platter of burgers. You're talking about big boy. Maybe I'm in that age group that remembers the big boys.
I remember it all too well. Well, if Chef Ramiro Scavo is listening, I'm thinking you're even inspired him to put a little bit of Thousand Island on there just to be some legacy for that old
burger. Yeah, give me a little Thousand on the side.
Absolutely.
Apple Annie's, always fun. Nice little drive over to Wilcox.
Yeah, you know, you've got this Apple Annie's sweet corn extravaganza out there in Wilcox. More than 20 acres of sweet corn that you can pick yourself, bring back home to Tucson for your next barbecue. But listen, while you're out there, you can enjoy some fresh fire-roasted corn dipped in this Amish rolled butter and seasoned with any of these wonderful toppings. Now, can't you just smell that butter, Bill?
Oh, I really can. You know, you're talking to a guy from Illinois, so when you talk about sweet corn in the summer, boy, that brings back all sorts of memories growing up north of Chicago and going out to those little farm stands and getting some sweet corn. Nothing like it on a hot summer day.
Everything goes better with butter. And in addition to the corn, the fields out there are full of summer crops like squash and cucumbers and really some of the best jalapenos you've ever had. This is a really great family fun weekend at Apple Annie's.
Arizona Sonora Desert Museum, they do a real nice job. The locals love to go out there in the summer. A lot of the visitors think it's too hot, but there's all sorts of activities, and why not dinner out there?
Yes, yeah, summer Saturday evenings at the Desert Museum. Now, this is a unique chance for your listeners to tour this world-class museum at night, which during this part of the year, Bill, this time of the year, this is really when the animals are at their most active. So I'm going to suggest starting out with dinner out there at the delicious Ocotillo Cafe, which is right on property, and then after dinner, come see what happens in the desert after dark. This is a great tour at the Desert Museum.
Okay, Matt, now it's time for you to hit the pool. Have a great weekend.
You do the same, Bill. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Matt Russell, with us with Weekend Watch. The Buckmaster Show, brought to you in part by Flowers Rieger & Associates, Certified Public Accountants, 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at flowersrieger.com. The Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of Team Buckmaster, all three of us, producer Rosemary Brandt, our marketing director, Deborah Howard, I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful and safe weekend. And also, we want to say thanks to Jose, who has been the Team Buckmaster Show intern this summer. He'll be off to Pueblo High as a freshman coming up here next month. Good luck to you, Jose. We've loved having you. Have a great weekend.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas and 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.